Lowe's knows how to set off your July 4th with savings. Right now, buy one, get one free on select one-coat coverage interior paint via Visa gift card rebate. Plus, get two select 2 or 2.5-quart red, white, and blue annuals for just $10. Hurry, these July 4th deals won't last long. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, excludes Alaska and Hawaii. More terms and restrictions apply. See Lowe's.com/rebates for more details.
Let me set the scene. It was late October, and my friends and I had planned a weekend getaway to a cabin we'd rented in the mountains. There were five of us. Me, my best friend Claire, her boyfriend Sam, and two other friends, Jess and Mike. We were all in need of a break from the daily grind, and the cabin promised crisp mountain air, cozy fireplaces, and complete relaxation. We hit the road Friday morning, taking a leisurely route through twisty roads and sleepy little towns. Around lunchtime, we pulled into a tiny town nestled in the hills. It had a single main street with a few shops, a gas station, and a small diner called Mabel's Eats. The place looked like something out of an old postcard. Quaint, but with that eerie quiet that small towns sometimes have. We parked and headed inside, the little bell above the door jingling as we entered. The diner was almost empty, just an older couple in a corner booth and a man sitting alone at the counter. We grabbed a booth by the window, laughing and flipping through the laminated menus, excited to finally stretch our legs. That's when I noticed him, the man at the counter. He was in his late 40s or early 50s with a scruffy beard and a worn-out flannel jacket. He wasn't eating, just nursing a cup of coffee and staring. Not at his drink or the clock. He was staring at us. His eyes were intense, unblinking, and it wasn't a passing look. He was fixated. At first, I thought maybe he was annoyed. We'd been a little loud coming in, and maybe we'd disturbed his quiet lunch. But the longer we sat there, the more unsettling it became. Even when the waitress came by to take our order, he didn't look away. Claire noticed too, nudging me under the table and giving me a look that said, "What's his deal? Do you guys think he's mad at us or something?" We all shook our heads. There was no reason for him to be upset. We hadn't even spoken to him. Sam, ever the jokester, raised his coffee mug in a mock toast toward the man. "Cheers, buddy," he said with a grin. The man didn't react. He just kept staring. We left the diner quickly after that, laughing nervously about the encounter, but brushing it off. It's not unusual to get some side eye when you're a group of strangers rolling into a small town, we reasoned. People are protective of their little communities. By late afternoon, we'd made it to the cabin. It was everything we'd hoped for, tucked away in the woods with a big porch and a fire pit in the yard. The trees were ablaze with fall colors, and the air was crisp and clean. We spent the rest of the evening unpacking, lighting a fire, and enjoying the peace and quiet. For the first time in months, I felt like I could breathe. Things were fine until dinner was over. That's when it all started to feel weird. We were sitting around the fire pit, roasting marshmallows and telling stupid ghost stories, when Mike suddenly went quiet, his eyes fixed on the tree line. "Hey," he said, his voice low. "Did you guys see that?" "See what?" Claire asked, turning to look where he was pointing. "I thought I saw someone over there," he said, "by that big tree." We all stared into the woods, the fire crackling between us. I didn't see anything at first, but then there it was, a shadow moving between the trees. It was subtle, just a flicker of motion, but enough to set my nerves on edge. "Probably just an animal," Jess said, trying to sound easygoing. "A deer or something." But I wasn't so sure. The shape had been tall, human-like. And then I remembered the man from the diner. We went inside soon after that, locking the doors and pulling the curtains. Sam and Mike joked about it being Bigfoot, but there was an undercurrent of unease in the room. We double-checked the locks before heading to bed, telling ourselves it was just our imaginations running wild. At around 2 a.m., I woke up to the sound of footsteps on the porch. At first, I thought it was one of my friends, maybe stepping out for some fresh air. But then I heard the soft creak of the wooden boards under weight, followed by a faint tapping on the living room window. My heart started racing. I reached for my phone, my hand trembling as I unlocked it. I texted Claire, who was in the next room. "Are you awake?" Her reply came almost immediately. Yeah. Did you hear that? I didn't want to scare the others, but I knew we couldn't just ignore it. I crept to Claire's room, and together we peeked out through a small gap in the curtain. The porch light was on, but barely illuminating the yard. And there he was, the man from the diner, standing at the edge of the porch, staring at the house. Claire and I woke the others, trying to stay as quiet as possible. We huddled in the hallway, whispering about what to do. Mike suggested going outside to confront him, but Jess and I quickly shot that down. If he was bold enough to follow us here, who knew what he was capable of? We decided to call the police. The dispatcher assured us that an officer would be sent to the cabin, but given the remote location, it would take at least 30 minutes. Outside, the man hadn't moved at first. He stood there just beyond the porch light, his face obscured by shadows. From the small gap between the curtains, we could see his silhouette, motionless, like he was waiting for something. Then, after what felt like an eternity, he started moving again, slow steps that sent shivers through all of us. Mike and Sam weren't the type to sit idly by. Sam stood up, his jaw tight, and whispered, "We can't just let this creep hang around all night. He's testing us." Mike grabbed the heavy flashlight from the coffee table and nodded. "Stay inside," he told us. "Lock the door behind us. We'll handle this." I wanted to argue, to tell them to wait for the police, but the determination in their face...
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
Lowe's knows how to set off your July 4th with savings. Right now, buy one, get one free on select one coat coverage interior paint via Visa gift card rebate. Plus, get two select 2 or 2.5 quart red, white, and blue annuals for just $10. Hurry, these July 4th deals won't last long. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, excludes Alaska and Hawaii. More terms and restrictions apply. See Lowe's.com/rebates for more details.
This has silenced me. As they slipped out the front door, I quickly locked it behind them. The silence inside the cabin was unbearable as we huddled by the window, trying to keep an eye on the man without making ourselves obvious. Outside, Mike and Sam approached the man. "Hey," Mike called out, his voice firm. "What are you doing here?" The man turned his head slowly toward them, his body tense but his hands hanging at his sides. "Just passing through," he finally said, his voice low and raspy. "Didn't mean to disturb anyone." Sam took a step forward, his flashlight trained on the man's face. "If that's true, why are you snooping around a private cabin in the middle of the night?" The man's lips curled into a faint smile. "Didn't know it was private," he said, though the way his eyes darted between them told a different story. "You need to leave," Mike said firmly, gripping the flashlight like a weapon. "Now!" For a moment, it seemed like the man might comply. He raised his hands slightly, palms out, and took a small step back, but then his smile widened, and he looked over his shoulder toward the side of the cabin. That's when Jess gasped. Another shadow moved just beyond the tree line, a second man standing barely visible in the dark. Mike and Sam must have seen him too, because they both stiffened. "We're not looking for trouble," Sam said, though his voice had lost some of its edge. The man in front of them chuckled softly. "Neither are we," he said, "but you never know who you'll meet out here." Without warning, the man lunged at Mike. The flashlight swung up, hitting his shoulder, and the man staggered back. At the same time, the second figure emerged from the shadows, sprinting toward them. Sam turned just in time, swinging his own flashlight like a bat, catching the man square in the chest. The force of it knocked him off balance, and he tumbled to the ground. "Get back in the cabin!" Mike shouted, grabbing Sam's arm. Together, they sprinted toward the porch as the two intruders scrambled to their feet. Inside, Jess and I fumbled with the locks, throwing the door open just as they reached the steps. We slammed it shut behind them, locking it and bracing it with a chair. "Call the cops again. Tell them we've got two guys trying to break in." The pounding started almost immediately, fists slamming against the door, followed by the sound of something heavy being thrown against it. The windows rattled as one of the men tried to pry them open, but thankfully we'd locked everything tight. "Stay back," Sam shouted through the door, holding the flashlight like a club. "The police are on their way." For a moment, the noise stopped. Then we heard them muttering outside, their voices low and indecipherable. A few seconds later, the sound of retreating footsteps faded into the night. When the police finally arrived, the men were long gone. They searched the property and the surrounding woods, but found no trace of them. The officer asked if we knew them or had any idea why they might be following us, but we were as clueless as they were. "He was at the diner earlier," I said, "just staring at us. I don't know why." The officer nodded, making notes in his little pad. "It's possible they're just drifters or some locals who saw the cabin and thought they'd have some fun, but we'll keep an eye out." We stayed up the rest of the night, jumpy at every sound, until the first light of dawn broke through the trees. None of us wanted to stay another night, so we packed up and left, cutting our trip short. It wasn't worth the anxiety. Even now, I can't stop thinking about that man. What was he doing at the cabin? What did he want? Was he just trying to scare us, or was it something more sinister? I don't know if I'll ever get those answers, but the lesson I take from this is that sometimes it's not the wilderness you have to worry about. It's the people lurking in it. My boyfriend Eric and I had been planning this weekend getaway for weeks. Both of us were long overdue for a break, and the idea of a quiet cabin retreat, far from the madness of everyday life, was so appealing. We'd picked a cozy spot advertised as secluded and romantic on one of those rental sites. The pictures looked amazing. Big stone fireplace, wraparound porch, and even a hot tub overlooking the forest. We arrived late Friday afternoon, just as the sun went down. The cabin looked just like the photos, maybe even better. It had that rustic charm, with wooden beams and large windows that let in plenty of natural light. The host had left a handwritten note on the kitchen counter, welcoming us and wishing us a great stay. Everything felt perfect. After we unpacked, Eric poured us glasses of wine, and we settled onto the couch in the living room. The fire crackled in the hearth, and for the first time in weeks, I felt myself relax. We talked, laughed, and planned the next day's hike. It wasn't until Eric got up to grab more wine that I noticed it, a tiny red light blinking in the upper corner of the room. "Hey, what's that?" I asked, pointing it out to Eric. He squinted. "Probably the smoke detector," he said. "They all have those little indicator lights." "Yeah, but why is it blinking?" I asked. "Smoke detectors usually had steady lights, didn't they?" Eric waved me off, saying it was probably nothing, and I let it go. After all, I wasn't here to stress over a piece of technology. The next day was perfect. We hiked through the woods, explored a nearby creek, and took way too many photos. By the time we got back to the cabin, we were starving and exhausted. Eric grilled steaks on the porch, while I prepared a salad inside. It felt good to be disconnected from the world, with no emails, no alarms, no distractions, just us. After dinner, we soaked in the hot tub under the stars. It was quiet. The cabin felt safe, cozy, like a little bubble separating us from reality. But later that night, as I was showering before bed, something caught my eye. Behind the bathroom vent, high up on the wall, was another blinking light. This one was blue. I froze, staring at it, trying to figure out if I was imagining things. It was so faint, almost unnoticeable, but it was definitely there. "Eric!" I called, stepping out of the shower and wrapping myself in a towel. "What's up?" he asked, poking his head into the bathroom. "Look," I said, pointing at the vent. "Do you see that?" Eric leaned closer, squinting. "What the hell?" he muttered. "That's weird." He grabbed his phone, turned on the flashlight, and climbed up onto the edge of the tub to get a better look. "There's something back there," he said after a moment. "It's not just a light. I think it's a camera." My stomach churned. A camera? In the bathroom? My mind raced through all the moments we'd spent in the cabin so far. Every private moment, every conversation, Eric tried to remove the vent cover but stopped when it became clear we'd need tools to get it off. "Let's check the rest of the cabin," he said. We started in the living room, shining the flashlight into corners, behind picture frames, and under shelves. In the bedroom, Eric spotted another blinking light, this time tucked behind a clock on the dresser. It wasn't a clock at all. It was some kind of device disguised as one. By now, my nerves were shot. "We need to leave," I said. "Right now." Eric nodded, but before we could start packing, he insisted on checking the smoke detector in the living room. It wasn't a smoke detector at all. Beneath the plastic casing was another camera, its lens hidden behind a translucent cover, blinking faintly. That was it. Any illusion of safety we'd had was shattered. We packed in a frenzy, shoving clothes and toiletries into our bags without bothering to fold or organize. Every second spent in that cabin felt like a violation, like someone was watching us even as we scrambled to escape. The thought of what those cameras had already captured made my stomach churn. Us laughing, talking, sleeping, and worst of all, the moments we believed were private. The camera in the bathroom had recorded me taking a shower. The one in the bedroom had watched us while we changed clothes and in our most private moments. The sheer intimacy of what they had was horrifying. Who was on the other side of those cameras? What were they planning to do with the footage? Would it end up online, shared in dark corners of the internet for strangers to ogle? Or worse, could it be used to stalk us in the future? The questions wouldn't stop racing through my mind as we threw everything into the car and drove away, leaving that nightmare cabin behind. Eric called the rental site's emergency line as we sped down the winding forest road, explaining what we'd found and urging them to take immediate action. Their response, calm, procedural, detached, only made me angrier. How could they treat this like a simple complaint when it was so much more? We weren't just dealing with a bad experience. We'd been targeted, violated, filmed without consent. When we got home, I couldn't sleep. Every time I closed my eyes, I thought about those blinking lights, the tiny cameras capturing our every move. I felt sick imagining someone sitting behind a monitor, watching us. The idea of a stranger seeing me at my most vulnerable, naked, wasn't just humiliating, it was dehumanizing. A week later, we got a call from the authorities. The property owner had been arrested after the police discovered a network of hidden cameras throughout the cabin, all wired to a central recording system. Worse, this wasn't his first offense. There were multiple complaints against him for similar incidents, and investigators believed he'd been running this operation for years. The footage he'd collected was vast, and its potential destinations were chilling to think about. I wanted to feel relieved that he'd been caught, but I couldn't. The damage was already done. The thought of where our footage might have ended up consumed me. Could someone be watching it right now? Was it circulating somewhere beyond our control, beyond our ability to stop it? That kind of exposure felt like a wound that would never fully heal. Months later, I still find myself obsessively checking every room I stay in. I scan for blinking lights, inspect vents and clocks, and unplug anything that looks remotely suspicious. Eric says, "I've become paranoid," but he doesn't argue when I do it. That weekend, we learned the hard way that you're never as alone as you think you are. The cabin was supposed to be an escape, a chance to recharge and reconnect. Instead, it became a nightmare. A bitter lesson in how fragile your privacy and your vulnerability can be in the wrong hands. And the worst part, knowing that the footage of those moments may still be out there, beyond our reach, forever. I'll start by saying I've always been a pretty skeptical guy. I'm an electrician, so I'm used to dealing with odd customers and shady situations that teach you how to spot a scam from a mile away. Or so I thought. When my girlfriend, Natalie, and I booked a cabin for a weekend getaway, I didn't even question it. She'd found the listing online through a rental site we'd used before, and everything seemed legit. The pictures were great, a cozy two-bedroom cabin tucked away in the woods with a little fire pit and a stunning view of the lake. It sounded perfect. We both needed the break. Work had been hectic for months, and this felt like the kind of quiet escape we'd been craving. I'd even surprised her by taking Friday off so we could head up early and enjoy the full weekend. The drive out was relaxing enough. Long stretches of open road, good music, and a stop at a diner for lunch that had surprisingly great pie. Everything felt right. When we arrived, the cabin looked just like the pictures, rustic but inviting, with a little porch swing and a stack of firewood off to the side. I grabbed the key from the lockbox and it fit perfectly. Inside, the place smelled faintly of cedar, with comfy furniture, a well-equipped kitchen, and a big stone fireplace. We spent the first couple of hours walking around the property and snapping pictures of the view. It all felt almost too good to be true. By the time evening rolled around, we were fully settled in. Natalie was making dinner in the kitchen, and I was on the porch, splitting some firewood for the night. That's when I heard the sound of tires crunching over gravel. I looked up and saw an SUV pulling into the driveway. My first thought was that it must be the property owner dropping by to check on something, though it seemed a little odd since we'd had no warning. The SUV came to a stop and a man stepped out. He was stocky, with a no-nonsense demeanor that immediately put me on edge. Behind him, a woman and two kids stayed in the car, their faces tense. The man started walking toward me, his stride quick and deliberate. "Can I help you?" I called out, setting the axe down. "This is my property," he said, his voice sharp. "What the hell are you doing here?" I blinked, completely thrown off. We rented the place for the weekend. I've got the confirmation email if you want to see it." The man's face darkened. "You rented it? From who?" "Through a site called Getaway Rentals," I said, pulling my phone out to show him the booking details. By this point, Natalie had come to the door, looking concerned. The man shook his head, his jaw tight. "This is my house. I didn't rent it to anyone." I could feel the tension building as the man's wife stepped out of the car, her arms crossed. "You've got the wrong place," she said firmly. "We live here." Natalie looked at me, confused. "But the key worked," she said quietly, "and it's exactly like the listing." The man's expression shifted, turning more suspicious. "You have a key?" "Yeah," I said, holding it up. "It was in the lockbox." For a moment, there was silence, and then his tone turned icy. "Get out of my house, now." Before I could respond, he reached into his car and pulled out a gun. Natalie gasped, and I instinctively stepped in front of her, raising my hands. "Whoa, whoa, there's no need for that. You break into my house and think I'm just gonna let it slide?" he snapped. "You've got 5 minutes to get your stuff and leave, or I'm calling the cops." My mind was racing as we scrambled to pack our things. I couldn't figure out what had gone wrong, how we'd ended up in someone's actual home. As I shoved clothes back into my duffel bag, I pulled up the rental confirmation email again. The address was right. The dates were right. But something about the whole situation felt off. Natalie was nearly in tears as we loaded the car, the man standing on the porch with his gun still in hand. As we pulled out of the driveway, I told her to call the rental site's customer service line to figure out what had happened. The answer came quickly and hit like a punch to the gut. The host we'd booked through wasn't the real owner. He'd created a fake listing, using photos of the cabin he'd probably pulled from an old real estate site. The key in the lockbox had been a copy, and the listing had been deleted shortly after we booked. It was a scam, and we'd fallen for it. We drove to the nearest town, both of us shaken and unsure of what to do next. I filed a police report, not expecting much to come of it, but wanting some record of what had happened. The officers were sympathetic, explaining that these types of scams were becoming more common, especially with remote rentals. We ended up finding a motel for the night, but neither of us slept much. I kept picturing the man with the gun, the anger in his voice as he ordered us out. I couldn't shake the feeling of how close we'd come to something far worse. In the days that followed, we contacted the rental site to report the scam and managed to get a refund, but the whole experience left a bad taste in my mouth. I couldn't stop thinking about the host who'd set us up. Did he know we'd end up confronting the real owners? Was he watching from a distance, waiting to see how it played out? The thought made my skin crawl. Now that I think about it, I can't believe I didn't look into the listing more before trusting it. The cabin had seemed perfect, the process easy, but that's exactly how these scams work. They prey on people who just want a good deal, who aren't expecting to encounter something so deceptive. Now, I triple-check every booking I make, researching the property and cross-referencing details before I even consider hitting confirm. It might take more time, but after what happened, I'd rather be safe than sorry. A weekend getaway is supposed to be about relaxing, not dodging bullets. Literally. Sometimes you just need to get away from everything. At least, that's what I told myself when I booked the cabin. My job can be overwhelming, and the thought of a quiet weekend in the woods sounded like heaven. I didn't need anything fancy, just a place to decompress. A friend recommended a small rental cabin near a lake a couple of hours away, and I jumped at the chance. The cabin itself was as advertised, rustic but clean, with a small kitchen and a cozy living area. It had that old wood smell, the kind you associate with summer camps and old furniture. The best part was the silence. No cars, no people, just the faint rustling of trees in the wind. I quickly set up my laptop to watch some movies later, made myself a cup of coffee, and settled onto the couch. This was exactly what I needed. The first noise came late that night. It was subtle, just a creak above me, like the groan of old wood settling. I looked up from my laptop, momentarily distracted, but I decided it wasn't worth worrying about. Cabins like this were bound to make noises. I chalked it up to the wind, or maybe a squirrel on the roof, and went back to my movie. But as the hours passed, the noises became harder to ignore. It wasn't just random creaking anymore. It sounded like intentional movement coming from the ceiling. Footsteps. Or at least that's what it sounded like. I muted the movie and sat there, listening intently. There it was again, a faint shuffle, then another creak. I told myself it was an animal, raccoons maybe, but a nagging feeling crept into the back of my mind. Raccoons didn't walk like that. Grabbing a flashlight, I walked around the cabin, checking the windows and doors. Everything was locked tight, and there was no sign of anything unusual outside. I went to bed that night, telling myself I was being paranoid, but it took me hours to fall asleep. The next morning, the noises were all but forgotten. Sunlight streamed through the windows, and the smell of coffee filled the air as I made breakfast. I spent the day exploring the nearby trails, taking photos, and reading on the porch. It felt good to unplug for a while. That evening, as I was tidying up, I noticed something I hadn't before. A small, square panel in the ceiling near the hallway. It was subtle, blending in with the wood grain, but once I saw it, I couldn't unsee it. It was an attic door. I couldn't help myself. I pulled over a chair and pushed the panel with my flashlight. It moved easily, revealing a dark void above. A metal ladder was folded neatly into the space, and I hesitated before pulling it down. I wasn't sure what I expected to find. Dusty storage boxes, maybe some old furniture. Instead, what I found made me feel sick. There were blankets piled in one corner. Next to them was a water bottle and a flashlight. Someone had been living up here, recently. I climbed back down. Who had been up there? Was it a squatter? A drifter? The cabin hadn't shown any signs of forced entry, so how had they gotten in? And more importantly, were they still here? I checked the attic again with my flashlight, but there was no one. It was eerily quiet. I tried to rationalize it. Maybe the person had left before I arrived. Maybe it was the caretaker. Maybe the owner of the cabin knew about it and had forgotten to clear it out. Still, the creepy feeling wouldn't go away. That night, I locked every door and window twice before going to bed, the attic door shut tight above me. I woke up around 2 a.m. to the sound of something heavy shifting above me. My heart thudded in my chest as I lay there, listening. It wasn't just creaking this time, it was movement, distinct movement. Someone was up there. The sound of the attic door creaking open made me bolt upright. I grabbed my phone and the flashlight, heart pounding as I stepped out into the hallway. The panel was slightly ajar, the ladder hanging down just enough to make it clear that someone had opened it. "Hello?" I called out. "Who's there?" No response, just silence. I backed into the bedroom, locking the door behind me. I called the cabin's owner, whispering into the phone as I explained what was happening. She sounded confused and insisted no one should have been there. "Call the police," she urged. "I'll be there as soon as I can." I didn't wait for the police. With my flashlight in one hand and my car keys in the other, I gathered my essentials as quickly and quietly as I could. The sound of footsteps above me continued, moving toward the other end of the cabin. I didn't stick around to find out who they were. I sprinted to my car, locking the doors as soon as I was inside. The headlights illuminated the driveway as I backed out, and I caught a glimpse of the attic window. There was someone staring down at me. I drove straight to the nearest gas station, parked under the bright fluorescent lights, and waited for the police to call back. When they arrived at the cabin, they found the attic empty, the makeshift living space gone. Whoever had been there had vanished when they realized I had seen them. The owner of the cabin was apologetic and horrified, but it didn't make me feel any better. She mentioned that vagrants occasionally broke into rentals in the area, but no one had ever reported anything like this. The police assured me they would keep an eye on the property, but I knew I wouldn't be going back. I can't explain who that person was or why they were there. All I know is that I came far too close to finding out. Now, whenever I book a getaway, I double-check every inch of the property, and I never ignore strange noises again. If these weekend getaway nightmares kept you on the edge of your seat, hit that like button and subscribe for more real life chills. What would you do if you found yourself in one of these situations? Let me know in the comments. I'd love to hear your take. Share this video with your fellow travelers and remind them to always stay alert on their adventures. Thanks for watching, and I'll see you in the next nightmare.
We interrupt this program to bring you an important Wayfair message. Wayfair's got style tips for every home. This is Styles McKenzie helping you make those rooms sing. Today's style tip: when it comes to making a statement, treat bold patterns like neutrals. Go wild, like an untamed animal print area rug under a rustic farmhouse table from Wayfair.com. Arr, fierce. This has been your Wayfair style tip to keep those interiors superior.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system, so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
Lowe's knows how to set off your July 4th with savings. Right now, buy one, get one free on select one coat coverage interior paint via Visa gift card rebate. Plus, get two select 2 or 2.5 quart red, white, and blue annuals for just $10. Hurry, these July 4th deals won't last long. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, excludes Alaska and Hawaii. More terms and restrictions apply. See Lowe's.com/rebates for more details.